school. Omeros leaned back against the wooden column, breathing in the smell of roast meat and freshly baked bread. He groped for the wine on the table before him, feeling the base of the cup with his fingertips before raising it to his lips. It tasted cool and refreshing, a local vintage from Ithaca or neighbouring Samos. Passing footsteps paused, and he felt the cup taken gently from his fingers, followed by the glug of wine being poured from a skin.
"I'll have one of the maids bring you some more bread and meat,"
said a female voice as the cup was pressed back into his hand.
"We can't have our famed bard going hungry."
"No, thank you, Eurycleia," he replied. "I've had my fill already."
He could almost sense her smiling at him, and then she was gone again, off to refill more cups. He scanned the hall, remembering it how he had last seen it 21 years ago, before the gods had taken his sight from him. The high ceiling, painted with moon and stars, and the four soaring columns that supported it, the long tables with the benches for the guests, the royal dais where the king and queen sat in their carved chairs, and the walls with their small alcoves from which crude figurines of the gods stood and watched. He recalled the elaborate battle scenes painted on the plaster, of the Lapiths and the Centaurs, and of the wars between the gods, the Titans and the Giants. He was told they were the same as he had known them, though the smoke stains had been cleaned off and the tarnished frescoes touched up. But the east wall, which had once depicted a battle between Odysseus and the Taphians, had been painted over with a mural of the city of Troy in flames and the wooden horse at its centre. Not that he needed anyone to tell him what that looked like. He had witnessed it himself. The voices around him began to quieten. The feasting was drawing to a close, and soon he would be called on to give the gathering a song. Unconsciously, his hand fell to his side and touched the tortoiseshell lyre leaning against the column. It was 10 years now since Odysseus had returned to Ithaca and reclaimed his throne, slaughtering the men who had taken over his home in the hope of marrying his wife. They had assumed the true king had perished on his journey home from Troy, and that through Penelope, one of them would become king of Ithaca in his place. They had paid for their arrogance with their lives. And what better way to celebrate the memory of Odysseus's victory than with a new song? A song about another man of courage and strength, the greatest hero of them all.
"Come on, Omeros," called Telemachus, Odysseus's son. "What will you give us tonight?"
Telemachus was 30 years old now, a king in waiting. His wife, Polycaste, had recently given him his first son, but Omeros still pictured him as the little boy he had last seen before leaving for Troy, on a ship full of untrained farmers and fishermen being sent to replace Ithacan losses in the war.
"What will you have, my lord?"
"Bellerophon and the Chimera,"
Polycaste suggested. Her voice was beautiful to hear, and he imagined her face to be equally captivating.
"How about the death of the suitors?" Penelope asked. "After all, it's 10 years to the day since my husband fought them in this hall."
"They're not 10 weeks since Omeros last sang it to us," Odysseus said.
"Since when have you ever tired of hearing about your own exploits?"
asked Eperitus, close friend of the king.
"Unless you'd prefer to hear about the wooden horse again, or maybe the Cyclops?"
"Not the Cyclops," Odysseus said, the cheer leaving his voice. "And unless I'm mistaken, our bard has been working on a new song. Isn't that where you've been hiding these past few days, Omeros?"
"It has been the work of many months, my lord," Omeros answered. "The last week has been spent rehearsing my performance."
"But performance of what?"
"A new poem to celebrate the anniversary of your return. A song about the most famous of all heroes, Heracles."
"Then let's hear it," Odysseus said.
Omeros fumbled for his lyre, and the last murmurs of conversation died away. Taking a flat piece of bone from the pouch at his hip, he drew it along the strings. The notes resonated gently, casting their spell over his audience until they thought of nothing but the sound of the music. And then he began to speak.